What sparked your passion for cooking?
I have a good appetite and I eat.
I'll often make subtle changes to the next batch of it.
As long as it has room to move around, it's classified as free range.
So my mother gave me a crash course in cookery when I was 16.
I remember sampling this amazing drink, thinking how I've never tasted coffee this good.
Which homemade desserts can be cheaper than shop-bought alternatives?
We want people to feel at home.
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour on Cambridge 105 with Matt Bentman and Ruth Reyes.
Yes, only the two of us today. Alan is on a training course in London. We've still got a packed programme though. We have an interview with Jade Scrimshaw from Urban Street Kings. They did a very impressive pop-up at Sticky Beaks on Hobson Street a week ago. They have another in December, which they'll tell us about. We also hear about a new supper club that's coming our way in a week and a half's time.
And with all this cooking going on, you might wonder where all of the chefs are coming from and how they develop their skills. Well, we've paid another visit to Cambridge Regional College and spent some time with a class of apprentice chefs as they learn how to perfect their skills.
But good food requires good ingredients too. So, Alan paid a visit to John West at the Art of Meat in Arbury Court to talk about the cuts he'll be selling this Christmas and to find out how you can get a rib of beef at half the normal price. Meanwhile, Inder's Kitchen has just launched some very cheaply priced meal deals, and Inder Bull gives us the details.
We spend a lot of time on the programme talking about the food that's available in Cambridge, but to what extent are the students at Cambridge University enjoying it all? We welcome Gigi Perry to tell us all about it. And we also welcome back Tom Lewis, who will be here shortly to give us his recommendations for Christmas drinking.
So, let's begin. Last week, Alan and I went to a new pop-up that has been, and please pardon the pun, I had to do it, popping up on our Twitter feeds and general food radar in the last couple of weeks. Urban Street Kings, and I think we can honestly say that we were super impressed with the food. Six courses, all good to look at and fabulous to taste. I went to speak with Jay, one of the Urban Street Kings, to find out more about what they do and where they will be heading.
Tell us about yourselves. When did you guys begin?
I've known Richard for about 20 years. I used to work for him at the Three Horseshoes when I was a little bit younger. A couple of years ago, I started doing pop-ups with my wife here in town. I was working at the Three Horseshoes, so I was using his kitchen, and we just thought, let's do something together.
Yeah.
And then Greg as well. So now the three of us, we can just throw ideas and, you know, and it's all a bit of fun at the moment because it's not about making money or business, or we want it to turn into something. We're just sort of putting that out there, seeing if people like it, have a little bit of fun with it, take it, see where it goes really. So it's quite organic, you know, and if it wilts.
So with your pop-ups, obviously ours on Thursday with six courses, is it always like that?
No, the formula has been six courses. We've got different influences. I'm very much classical French trained. Richard is more Italian and sort of fusion sort of thing. So we sort of picked a theme to start off with, was like Vietnamese.
Yeah.
But we don't want to tie ourselves to any one sort of genre. We can put our hands to anything. So it will be six courses, but we might throw a theme in there, or it might be, you know, full-on Italian, or maybe I'd quite like to do a real full-on French, country French sort of type thing.
It's 19th
of December. No one knows about that yet.
So
we're going to have a little bit of a Christmas. So the week before Christmas, it's going to be elements of Christmas, not overloaded. We're not talking turkey and all that sort of rubbish.
Yeah.
You know, they're just little bits to get us all a little bit excited that, you know, Christmas is coming, and, you know, remembering that people have got to eat an awful lot of festive meals in the next sort of fortnight. So, 19.
So, you guys, on your Twitter, it says you have a van.
Well, that was the idea. So, that was the idea. The idea behind it, originally, so the reason why we're doing pop-ups was to create interest. So when we get the van. And we were going to get the van in October, November. But now we've decided it's like a little bit too cold because we want to take it to festivals and stuff like that. So the actual van, the big van sort of for that festival thing, would be starting in spring. But, you know, we go down to the Curb and different places like that in London. The whole food scene there is just massive. And I do feel in Cambridge there's something that has been just sort of tiptoeing on the edge of something could potentially be quite cool. So, you know, we've got Leo at there with Steak and Honour and different little vans going round, and I think it's going to just snowball into something quite cool, and I quite like to be a part of that. So we're going to somehow get a little van to do around town. It's just quite hard with the universities and finding out where you can be, and the council are quite strict about different things, so I think it would have to be a sort of a case of an illegal curb sort of thing. But I mean, to get something like that going would be really cool, you know, and it's until you've got to meet the right people. And so doing these pop-ups, you know, that all these different people are coming in from Twitter, and they do supper clubs and all that sort of stuff. So once we get, and the East Cambridge Festival as well is going to be a really good opportunity to meet different people, so we can, you know, once you get a core group of people who are like-minded and thinking the same what they want, we can hopefully go anywhere with it, you know, and get something really cool started in Cambridge. The people are here, you know, they either work in London or they go to London or they've moved back to Cambridge from London with kids, and they all want that London-esque type thing happening, you know, that vibe. Hopefully something like that will start.
Absolutely.
You know, and it'd be nice to be a part of it, really.
So, also on your Twitter, it says if you find us, you can hire us. Is that like a catering type situation?
Yep. So we're putting ourselves out there for like private parties, Mabel's, of which we've got an inquiry now, which is quite good. So yeah, basically anything really. Yeah, because we are restaurant chefs, you know, we can put our hand to anything. So going to their house to do it, going to another restaurant or a venue, you know, we can do it all. And you know what I'd like to do, ideal situation would be like to find like a warehouse, you know, and put on sort of like illegal, it's almost like rave dinner parties in warehouses, sort of bit down, trip down memory lane, sort of nostalgia. I don't know if breaking into them would be a good idea, but I think it's quite hard to find the properties there. We've found a few, but they're not quite right, and they want a bit too much money. But something that's a bit cutting edge, not probably not the right word, just something a bit different, you know. People, you know, they want to go out for dinner, they've got money to spend, but going to that restaurant where it's that same formula, as it were, so trying to mix it up a little bit, something so you're getting a little bit more for your money. It's a proper night out rather than going out for dinner and then going somewhere else. You can, you know, be with 20, 30 people or more of the same people who just want to have, you know, they've got kids at home, so they want to make the most of that night, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what also what we want to do. But yeah, we're for hire. We're
awesome.
Like renegades chef type people, you know. We could, nothing's going to be too big. We just put our minds to it, we can do anything.
Pop up on Thursday, you had another menu that had like finger food and stuff. Is that the kind of stuff that you do then?
Urban Street Kings essentially was going to be, or going to be, the van. Then the Guerrilla Kitchen side was like the sort of hijacking of restaurants, of warehouses and stuff like that. So it's almost a two, you know, there was Urban Street Kings, that was the van and the market or whatever. Then there was the guerrilla side of the business, which potentially, you know, goes into restaurants, warehouses, people's houses, whatever, sort of that sort of hijacking of anywhere. And that sort of, you know, we can go anywhere, we can do anything, you know. We've bought some military mess tents that in the summer we want to do pop-ups in a field somewhere and do sort of maybe like, I quite like MASH like that. So like, you know, have someone making cocktails out of, you know, medical equipment and just something really quirky and, you know, just something different. That's the, yeah, so that's the guerrilla side of it. So it had that sort of military, you know, anything goes type thing. And then the Urban Street Kings was the van. And then with that, there was going to be finger food, hand food, fork food, and bowl food. You know, something you can eat with your hands, something just with a fork, something in a bowl. And so that's, but they're just ideas at the moment. We come up with an idea, we write it down, we'll put it out there, we'll see if it works, see what it's like, and then might not work, so we'll scrap it and try something else. Like I said, it's all about just having a bit of fun. Yeah.
Well, I hope it goes well, because some of those things sound amazing.
Yeah.
And
right.
I can't wait. I really hope you do the MASH situation there. Because
that's definitely happening, because I've got my big Red Cross tent.
Oh,
and I've
so
got
excited.
My massive army stoves. We just bought a Field Kitchens off eBay, like they're British made, bomb proof. That's all they said. So
that's,
I was like,
amazing.
Massive stove, so we can go anywhere, really.
So there we are. Suffice to say, they are certainly ones to look out for. There's a desire to break the mold, to be exciting and innovative, not only in the food, but in the venues too. This is very early days for them, but if their concept is as good as their food, and their food is excellent, then we are in for a very exciting 2014. As they mentioned, they will have another pop-up on the 19th of December. Go to their Twitter for more details on booking and location. But a little sooner than that, they will be at the Mill Road Winter Fair next Saturday the 7th. Definitely head over for catch a little taste.
So what was the pop-up like then, Ruth? What kind of food were they serving?
I'm not sure what kind of food you would categorise it in, but there was a squid ink cracker with oyster mayo, which was... Have you ever heard of that?
Well, I've certainly never heard of it, and that is the definition of innovative, I think.
Exactly. And that was just great. Basically, everything else was like that, too. There was a violet ice cream with frozen chocolate, and it was just good. It was different. Nothing like you've ever eaten before, I think. At least not me.
Violet chocolate, that's violet petals, so they're very, very subtle, aren't they?
Yeah, and the ice cream was purple, and it was just, it was good.
Was it a sweet and salty ice cream? That's very fashionable
right
now. Oh, yeah,
the ice cream, because it had salted caramel, and that one, that had the salty, but it was also sweet. It was good.
Very
it was just all very good. And basically, Mr. and Mrs. Awkward would have been impressed.
I hope they were. Now, what you might call the alternative food scene in Cambridge really is developing quickly. Alan was saying how good Stella Pereira's Portuguese Supper Club was. Stella was on our last programme. If you missed it, you can download it as a podcast from Cambridge105.fm. Just click on Listen in the top bar and then on Podcasts. Alan went to the Supper Club a few days before the Urban Street Kings pop-up, and there are other supper clubs coming our way soon. We'll hear about one of them after this, and then we'll give some information about some more in the news section later in the programme.
In Your Company is Cambridge 105's business programme, presented by me, Sam Davis. In Your Company captures the diversity of the Cambridge business scene by talking to not only the high-tech headline grabbers, but also the sole traders and the startups and the experts who can help us make sense of it. Listen to In Your Company at 3 p.m. on Saturday afternoons every fortnight. The podcasts of our shows are available on the Cambridge 105 website. Community radio in your city, Cambridge 105.
On December 11th, a new supper club arrives in Cambridge. It's run by the couple who are behind Franglais Kitchen website, Nazima Pathan and her partner Pierre. The website is very professional, with recipes, reviews of cookbooks and restaurants, all sorts. And the recipes are pretty enticing too. If you make sourdough bread, can you resist the idea of making sourdough naan bread with cumin and salt? And if desserts are more your thing, how about lemon yogurt cake bites with basil and lemon syrup? Matt, stop drooling.
Nazima, can you tell me a little bit about Franglais Kitchen, what you do?
Sure. Myself and my husband, Pierre, write about food at our website, Franglais Kitchen, which we've been doing for the last 3 years, and it's been growing in popularity. We've come from diverse backgrounds, culturally as well as food-wise. Pierre has trained and worked as a chef for many years, and I'm a keen home cook. What we love to do is make seasonal food with fresh ingredients and with unusual flavour combinations. And now, at this point, we feel ready to come out from behind the pictures and the words on our site and actually share that with people in the community. So that's why we're getting involved in various events.
Do you do lots of experimentation in your kitchen then?
We do. We enjoy cooking. We have a kitchen that it's the hub of our life, of our family life. And we have been practicing. We always try and practice and develop recipes, particularly obviously those that we want to share with people.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like an interesting place to live. So there's a supper club coming up, your first. When is it?
We have one supper club planned on the 11th of December and
right.
Another one at the end of January.
Okay. And what sort of things are on the menu? Are there many dishes?
Yeah, so for the first supper club is a theme of modern Indian food, which has five courses. All of our supper clubs will have five courses, and the kind of food that we have will, as I say, have a sort of classic French influence as well as Indian. So one of our starters, for example, is rillette of duck leg, which we're going to make at home by confying the duck leg in a spiced mix and then making the rillette, preparing the rillette from that and serving it with a sort of Indian flavoured mango and papaya salsa. So that kind of flavour combination is what people could expect when they come to eat at our supper clubs.
Okay, you mentioned duck. Are you catering for vegetarians
as
well?
Yes, absolutely. Got quite an exciting vegetarian menu. For every single course that we have vegetarian options. So, for example, with our main course for vegetarians, we're going to be tandooring some vegetables such as a whole cauliflower and broccoli and serving it with a couscous that's been mixed with an Indian achari spice, so with mangoes and and pickled limes in. And so those are the kinds of things that we'd be doing for vegetarians as well. Right. Vegetarian option and a meat option, and obviously then the desserts would be all suitable for all.
Right. And are you going to be asking people to say in advance what they're going to opt
for? Yes, so I'm going to email people and ask them to specify. I think people could opt for one vegetarian and one meat if people prefer that particular item on the menu, which they can see on the website.
Yeah. Right, 5 courses. It sounds quite adventurous. So how much is it?
It's £30, and that includes a welcome drink and also soft drinks throughout the meal. And we hope people will feel it's good value. Certainly it's going to be a lot of work. We've got we've ordered our poussins from the local butcher and all kinds of local seasonal ingredients in it.
Right, so poussin is on the menu as well?
It is, that's the main course. It's a spiced roasted poussin with a cinnamon and anise jus.
And people bring their own wine?
Yes, and we've teamed up with Noel Young Wines in Trumpington, who are going to provide suggestions to match. So if people would like, then, you know, at a range of different prices, so that we could even potentially have them have it delivered to us so that they can have it ready for the meal.
So the white wines could be properly chilled and,
exactly.
and things like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah. How do people book?
They can email us on our email, which is fronglaykitchen@gmail.com, or there's more details on the website.
Right. And are you revealing whereabouts it's taking place yet?
No, that'll be revealed when people book a place.
Okay, in the great tradition of supper clubs. Right, okay, and you've got another one coming up at the end of January?
Yes, one at the end of January, which will be a slightly bigger event in that we'll have more spaces. We will reveal those details, hopefully, at the Mill Road event we're doing at Mill Road Winter Fair, where we're going to do some Amuse Bouche as a prequel to our Indian Supper Club, and that will be at Cambridge Kitchens on Mill Road.
And that was Nazima Pathan. And a reminder that the Supper Club is on the 11th of December, and the details, including the menu options, can be found on the Franglais Kitchen website. And they have an events tab at the top of their home page to click on.
Still to come on Flavour Today, John West from The Art of Meat tells us about what he'll be selling for the Christmas season. Inder Bull talks about the meal deals at Inder's Kitchen. Gigi Perry on the Cambridge University food scene. And Tom Lewis will be here with his Wines of the Month.
But first, a visit to Cambridge Regional College to see how tomorrow's top chefs are developing their skills. Alan visited them while they were finishing a taught module on eggs. The chefs on the course come from a wide variety of places: Pembroke College, Selwyn College, Fitzbillies, the Sea Tree on Mill Road, and various hotels and pubs. And while their workplaces may differ, their commitment doesn't. Lecturer Ian Spark began demonstrating how to make a souffle.
First of all, we've got 125 millilitres of milk with a little bit of vanilla in there to infuse over the heat. Next thing we're going to do, we need to prepare the ramekins. So you're each going to do 4 portions of your pair. You'll need 4 ramekins. Butter the inside of a ramekin, not too much butter. Tap the sugar around the inside of the ramekin so you get a nice coating. Sugar stops the souffle sticking to the ramekin, gives it a nice sweet crisp edge and allows it to rise inside the ramekin so it won't stick. Once your milk is simmering, then we are going to make a crepe pâtissière. Those of you who remember a crepe pat, crepe pâtissière, pastry cream, is a set of a very thick custard, egg custard. So I've got here some sugar, a little bit of flour, and some egg yolks, which will form the thickening agent of the crème pâtissière or the pastry cream. Now I'm separating the eggs, making sure there is no egg white, so no yolk, making sure there's no yolk in the egg whites. If you get any egg yolks in these whites, they're not going to whip up. The other thing, chefs, you need to make sure that everything is spotlessly clean, no fat in there of any sort, your bowl, your whisk. If you get any water in there, it will stop the egg whites from whisking up. Stir those egg yolks through them. That will loosen the mixture and make it nice and rich. I'm just going to place that into a bowl ready to add my whites. So now, we need to be careful about the way we incorporate this into the crème pâtissière. If we're too heavy-handed with it now, we knock out all of that air that I just whisked into that egg white. So we take a little bit first of all, and we fold it really, really gently into our crème pâtissière. See how nice and light that mixture is now. So we then take this and place it into the ramekin. Just tap it down lightly, not too hard. Just level the top off with a palette knife. And then it's good practice just to go around with your thumb around the edge of the rim, just to make sure there's nothing there that the souffle can catch on when it starts to rise.
So after a discussion of twice-baked soufflés and the possible use of corn flour, the apprentices got to work, with commendable speed and with the confidence that comes of knowing not only what to do, but also why you're doing it. So what do you have to do here?
Coating the dishes with sugar.
What have you put in before you put the sugar in?
Some butter.
And is that, what's that for?
To stick the sugar to every part of the dish.
How do you know when to stop whisking the egg whites?
When it's got the stiff beaks. You can turn it upside down rather than falling down.
If you're doing that, like that is perfect. And then they're coming out.
Yeah.
So now it's ready.
That's taking quite a lot of hard work, isn't it?
Yeah.
In the kitchen, in a professional kitchen, would you use a whisk or would you use a machine?
Pretty, on a bigger scale, so you'd use a machine.
Yeah.
You'd be there a long time.
Yeah, because speed is of the essence,
yeah,
really.
Speed, yeah, you've got lots of jobs to do. Spend too long doing one thing.
Yeah. And while some students were still whisking away, others were folding gently. So what you're doing now is you're putting the whisked egg white into, yeah, what's that mixture?
It's pastry cream.
This is a pastry cream, egg yolk, sugar, vanilla sugar, milk,
a bit of flour,
and a little bit of flour.
And you're doing this quite gently, aren't you?
I mean,
you're
not. Because I don't want to break in the white. I want to be in the bubbles, because that makes sure it's really came up the soup.
Right,
there.
So you need to keep the air in.
Yeah, yeah.
I suppose if you're putting all that effort to get the air in, you'd be a bit distressed if it all came
in. In a pancake, in a bowl of ramekin.
Still nice, though.
Near the pancake.
So how do you think they're going?
They look like they've got quite a lot of air in them. I think that's the most important bit. But yeah.
Just got a palette knife, please.
Well, you have to flatten off the top, do you?
Yeah, flatten the top.
And then you have to run around the
inside of it to stop it from anything can catch.
Yeah.
Right. Because if it catches, what, you get an uneven rise, will it?
Yeah. I'll get us another.
Why is that slightly different than the middle?
It's just
not completely mixed in. I wonder what difference that will make. That'll be interesting to see. So how do you think they're doing with the soufflés? Are they
very good so far?
Seem to be
going. They've taken on board the demonstration that we gave at the beginning.
I've seen two, actually, certainly no more than two, where the folding in isn't complete. So
that's something you learn, I think, with repeating the tasks.
Yeah.
The actual, you know, the folding in needs to be, that's the most important part of the souffle, in fact, actually. If you don't get that right, you won't get an even colour, you won't get an even rise on it, and the texture won't be completely even all the way through either. For a first effort, the trainees, very good. Very good overall, yeah. The proof is in the pudding, as they say. We'll see them in a minute when they come out.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping somebody will offer me a bit of theirs as well.
I'm sure they will. There seems to be plenty of them at the moment.
I noticed that the ovens, well, it is a professional kitchen. They're not glass fronted. You can't see what's going on inside. So, how do you know when it's risen?
Instinct takes over eventually. Once you get that good at it and you've practiced it enough, you know exactly how long something will take before you actually start to open the oven on it.
But it's pretty fatal if you open it at the wrong time, isn't it?
You can get away with it to a certain extent. If you open the oven slightly just to have a little look, you can get away with that. As long as you don't slam the door. If you slam the door, you'll knock the air out of the souffle as well.
Yeah. And you were saying before about measurements and how a professional chef...
Again, once you get good at your trade, a lot of chefs, they'll cook to eye, they won't measure stuff necessarily. So pastry chefs, for instance, will cook a creme patissiere from scratch without even measuring it, and they'll get it right every time.
Just because they're used to
just
what the quantities look like.
Just because they're used to the
like.
Quantities, the taste, the textures. It's very sensual, you know, they're cooking to the senses rather than measurements.
Yeah.
How much longer has yours got to be in the oven for?
I have to wait another 2 more minutes.
And how's it looking?
Sorry. It is perfect. Like that.
Well, they look very nice.
Oh, yeah.
They
hopefully it tastes nice. Like the basic. Wait. Ice! Ice!
Ice.
Why do you need ice?
Ice and sugar.
Oh.
Slang words.
Ready to serve. Perfection on a plate.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I couldn't have said it better myself.
But it is, isn't it? They look great. What do you think of them?
Very proud. Yeah, I've recreationally attempted it once, and this is a lot better. I'm not sure.
Why is this one better, do you think?
Probably just did some small mistake. Like, there's a lot that can go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, the sort of the cleaning round the top seems quite important, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Really, I think you've done
really
well.
Good even rise on those. They look fantastic, guys. Well done. Really well done. Try one. Dig in.
There we go, look.
See, have a look at your texture.
We're all good.
Very good. Wow. Really good.
So how does it taste? This is what counts, isn't it?
It's airy, light,
it is as well.
Vanilla-y.
You can taste the vanilla in it, can you? Yeah.
These are just about there. They are traditionally finished with shaking of icing sugar. This is why you need your waiter right in front of you to take it straight to the table. That would go out the door. See, it starts to collapse already.
Cheers.
Okay, have a taste, chef. Dig in. Pass me another plate, will you, please? It should be quite firm, soft in the middle, very light and fluffy. Smell the vanilla.
And when people use things like cornflour, does it change it in any way? Does it make it like less
lighter?
Or
it stabilises the lift. The rise on it is actually more stable. It will take longer.
But would you know when you were eating it that it was different?
Probably not. Done.
That really is light, isn't it? That's lovely.
Spot on. Spot on. Get that in your ramekin. Remember to thumb the edge.
Oh, what a busy session. Many thanks to lecturer Ian Spark and the apprentice chefs for their contributions there. And don't forget, you can eat at the college's Park Brasserie. It's getting very busy now, so it's advisable to book. You'll find a direct link to their website and booking details on the podcast page accompanying today's programme. The Park Brasserie is very reasonably priced and very professionally run.
Join me, Tony Della, with my weekly Northern Soul show every Tuesday evening, 7 till 9, playing classic Northern Soul, 70s and Detroit gems, right here on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
On to other students now, those at Cambridge University. We have often wondered how much involvement with the local food scene the students have. We meet students in pubs, but not in cafes or restaurants. Are they there? And what's the university food scene like? Judging from the recent culinary competition, it's very good. But what we saw at the culinary competition isn't what is served every day, surely. Here is Gigi Perry, a student at Pembroke College. She writes about food for the newspaper Cambridge Student. And of course, with the all-encompassing nature of social media, she naturally tweets about it too.
Gigi, is there much of a foodie culture at the university amongst students?
There's a lot of interest in food, but it's something that you can take advantage of if you want to, or you can just enjoy it for what it is. I'm at Pembroke College, and the food is really fantastic. And so every day they post the menu of what they're cooking for your lunch and supper. And so there's a huge culture of, as soon as it's up at 10 a.m, everyone will be on there looking to see what and planning what they're going to eat. That's my favourite, and I've decided by 10 a.m. what my supper will be. Also with the formal halls as well, which we're very lucky at Pembroke that those are every night, and the food is really fantastic there, and they're always experimenting with different cuisines and different types of cooking and flavours. You can have such an interest in that and come across different words and different names for recipes. It really expands your knowledge, or you can just go and enjoy the food.
Yeah, so give us an example of the sort of good food you've eaten at Pembroke.
On Tuesday night I was at formal, and we had the amuse-bouche was a pumpkin sort of mousse with a caviar and orange, and then we had butternut squash soup with a brown butter and creme fraiche and nutmeg creme fraiche.
Butternut squash is really popular, isn't
really
it?
Really is, yeah. Yes.
It's got so much flavour in it.
I know, and it's such a good one as well for vegetarian. It's a vegetarian option.
Yeah.
And then we had for the main the braised steak, which was really fantastic. But it was the pudding was warm chocolate bouchons with a clotted cream ice cream. and it was everyone could not stop raving about it.
Does really this mean brilliant. That Pembroke students are putting on weight at a greater rate
it's
than
really
anywhere?
It's really hard.
So that, but that was a formal.
Yes.
What's the more day to day?
Day to day, there's a really big choice. So you can, they always have a variety of fish, meat, vegetarian options, and a salad bar. And they sort of do a street food as well. So they there's two street food options which you can take away, or and with that they experiment with different nationalities, and so that, or they actually went through a stage of trying out. They go through sort of Ottolenghi recipes, so you see all the recipes, the things that I'd wanted to cook. So there's this apple cake. I was desperate. I never cooked it, and then they put it on the menu. So that's really brilliant. And
wow.
There's just such a range, and they have a very good feedback system. So you can say what you enjoy, and they sort of cook more of it. And they do actually, they really do pay attention to what students want.
Yeah. Do they do requests? Can you say, fancy this from this Ottolenghi book?
There's this particular salmon bento which they do, which I just love. And so every time that's on, I always sort of give feedback saying how good it is.
So
that's a popular one.
Gosh, that's really good. And has Pembroke got a particularly good reputation?
It has. We have a brunch on the weekends that so many colleges... We've had to extend the opening hours because it's so popular with other colleges to come to it. And we sort of, we're known for our pancakes and waffles, which are really fun. I don't know whether it's founded or not, but everyone says we have a Michelin-star pancake chef. I've not found out if it's true.
But you think it might be.
I think it is. It tastes like it could be.
So do you do sort of food tours of different colleges then and
yes.
explore what's going on?
They the RAG, which is a sort of charity set up, they have a formal swap, so you sort of pay a bit extra and you can try the food at formals at other colleges. But I've got a friend who has, because I think there are about 30 odd colleges, and he's had formal at 17 of them, and his aim is before he leaves to have eaten at every college. I think he'll manage it, actually.
Right, which is, I think, 31, isn't it? So
yes.
He's more than halfway.
Yeah.
Right. If the university food is so good and so interesting and so varied, does that mean that the majority of students don't eat out, don't get to explore what Cambridge itself has got to offer?
It really depends, because when your parents visit, that's such a big thing, is where are you going to eat, with where are they going to take you out to eat. And so for meals and things, food is such a sociable thing, and so people do go out for meals a lot. But I think really the cafe culture is really popular, and so that's why I think places like Aromi, they just do so well, because it's not expensive to go and have a coffee and a cake, a nice break from your day, and sort of get, you can meet up with friends outside of college.
And Aromi is also particularly
it's fantastic.
Good, isn't it?
Really,
a really
brilliant.
Impressive place.
I know. I mean, the queues there are always... And people, you wait in them because it's worth it.
So where else is popular?
As well, Sticky Beaks. I think afternoon teas is going... Like, it's done so well so far. And I think more and more people are now finding out about it. And actually, but not for so much for, as a cafe, but Bill's as a place to eat is hugely popular.
And it's easy to spend a lot of time in Bill's, isn't it? They don't seem to bother you too much.
Yes.
And if you just want a cup of tea and a cake, you get an enormous teapot.
I know. I know. And it's such a... It doesn't... I know it's a chain, but it doesn't have that feel. I think all the bright colours and things, it's very informal.
Yeah, it looks great as well, doesn't it? It's very relaxed.
It really does.
Yeah. What about restaurants then?
Very popular, I think, really are sort of Asian cuisine. So Wagamama, like, I know it's a chain as well, but Wagamama's is very popular. Dojo's is just because...
In Mill Lane.
Yeah, the portion sizes are ridiculously huge.
Yeah.
And then sushi as well, which I think is what I think is brilliant about Cambridge is that you've got increasingly more independent places, but you've got the chains as well. And a lot of them have student deals, so it's not hugely expensive to eat out.
And you write a food column, as I said at the beginning, for the Cambridge Student. What sort of things do you write about there?
In the print edition, every week the recurring feature is an article called The Art of the Perfect, and then the subject matter changes. So we've done coffee or chocolate, brunch, sushi. And so that in that it'll include maybe a bit about the history of it, where to have enjoy that in Cambridge, how to make your own, and so that's sort of like a fun feature. And then online we do different restaurant reviews, or increasingly very short foodie debates. And then people sort of submit different things, so just like a one-off article on how to make the most of student culinary equipment. And then also just that someone wrote about their holiday to India and the food they had there.
Yeah.
So it's sort of it just depends on what people want to submit, really.
When you say making the best use of the culinary equipment, that's what you have in your kitchen, which I think is quite modest, isn't it?
Very limited. You have to become master of the microwave, two hobs, which sort of turn off every 5 minutes, and some have ovens.
Wow.
So if you've got an oven, you're in demand.
Oven. Yeah, no, right. So people come and share your oven.
Yes. You want to make a cake, you have to choose your friends wisely.
Right. Thanks to Gigi Perry from Pembroke College, who will be keeping us updated on university food news next term. And you can follow Gigi on Twitter at GigiPerry123.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge 105. We are here on alternate Saturdays, and the programme is now repeated the very next day at 7 a.m. It's then made available online as a podcast, usually within a couple of days. You can also keep in touch with Cambridge's food and drink news by following us on Twitter, at Flavour105. We like hearing from you too, so do feel free to tweet us, or you can email us. Our address is flavour@cambridge105.fm.
Now next on Flavour, Inda Bull talks about the meal deals at Inda's Kitchen. Tom Lewis joins us with his wines of the month, and we've a selection of the latest food and drink news.
Inda's Kitchen was a finalist on the BBC Radio 4 Food and Farming Awards last year. She's introduced meal deals. They're incredibly busy on Friday and Saturday nights and need to spread the load across the week. Alan went out to find out more from joint founder Inda Bull.
It's something that we've just recently introduced to give people good value, a midweek option, a bit of a no-brainer, so they can come home and just press a button and a delicious meal arrives that suits their pocket and their palate. It's just quick and easy.
Yeah, when is midweek, by the way?
Midweek is Tuesday to Thursday. We're closed on Mondays, and we also run it on Sunday. So it's really all week apart from Friday and Saturday.
Okay, so what do you get?
What do you get? There are various combinations, which we change every week, so people just get variety 1 week to the next. But you can get a meal for two or a meal for four. And we give people an option, for example, for a chicken curry meal, which is a full portion of chicken curry, a full portion of a vegetable dish, which this week is butternut squash, some rice, some bread, some mini poppadoms, and that's all at $14.95. So
that's for two people.
And then we have a beef option, a vegetarian option, and then we also have meals for four, which seem to have been quite popular for sort of families or for friends getting together. So another example would be the vegetarian meal for four is our Indian-style ratatouille, butternut squash curry, it's very seasonal at the moment, sargaloo and tarka dal as side dishes, rice, naan and mini poppadoms, and that's for $24.95, and that's for four people, that's really good value.
Right, so there's a vegetarian option and what, a meat option as well?
Yes, well we've got a chicken option, beef this week, so a chicken and red meat, and a vegetarian option, and all of those are either for two people or four people.
Right.
So there's quite a bit of variety in there.
Yeah, and what the precise detail changes week by week, does it?
I think we're trying to, because we still run our bi-weekly specials, so I think if people do like the midweek offer, then just to offer them something different every week is quite nice, so that there is a bit of variety, even if you are going for a meal deal. So we're trying to mix it up a little bit, keeping obviously the favourites, things like chicken, but using some of the specials that we're using at the moment, or anything that's particularly in season or going well.
Okay, aside from the meal deals, looking at your sort of the whole menu, is there anything you're particularly pleased with at the moment?
We've introduced mutton in the last two of our menus, which has been really popular. It's a very traditional meat that's cooked in India. We've done a very fiery version for this menu called Lal Mas, which gets its colour entirely from chilies and tomatoes, so that gives you an idea of how hot it is. So that seems to have done very well. And some of our vegetarian dishes are doing very well as well. So we've got vegetable koftas, our butternut squash curry is doing very well. And we tried doing an Indian-style ratatouille, which again has been really popular. But so there are a few new and interesting dishes that we've tried that seem to have been very well received.
Right, good. Okay, and remind me when you open, every day until except Monday?
Every day except Monday at the moment.
And last orders?
Last orders are at 10 o'clock.
Right.
So last delivery slot 10 to 10.30, and evening service kicks off at 5. And we do have a sort of happy hour between 5 and 6.30. So last delivery sort of 6 to 6.30, where you get 20% off. So it's just, we call it an early diner discount. So if people want to eat early with families, for example, then they can benefit from a little bit of money off that way too.
Brilliant. Okay, thank you very much, Inda.
Pleasure.
And that was Inda Bull from Inda's Kitchen. You can get more information about their meal deals and also see the full menu on the Inda's Kitchen website, where you can place your orders.
And now let's move on to the wines of the month for December. And Tom Lewis has joined us in the studio.
Yeah, hello, Tom.
Hi, hi.
And now with Christmas almost upon us, do wine sales peak during this period, do you find?
Well, apparently something like 70% of all wine is sold between September and Christmas. So I'd like to hope that some of that extra spend is going into quality as well as quantity.
Do you have any thoughts on how much to spend on a bottle of wine?
Well, the national average price of a bottle of wine is around a fiver. And what that means is after taxes, duties and so on, you're only getting about 50p's worth of wine. But the good news is if you start to spend slightly more, then a greater proportion of the extra money you're spending is actually going into the quality of the wine. Essentially, you've already covered all the fixed amounts.
That's perhaps an issue that we can discuss in a later programme. So you've got some guest wines again this month, and you've divided it into courses, yes?
That's right, yes. Yeah. So what I've got is some fizz, some wines for Christmas dinner, and then some indulgent stickies to go with the mince pies and the Christmas pudding.
Yeah, I've got a very sweet tooth. I guess if you're a bit stuffed from the Christmas dinner, you could have the dessert wine in place of the pies and the pudding.
In place of, as well as?
Yeah, yeah, it serves the same purpose, yeah. Ruth, do you like dessert wines? Do you have a favourite one?
I do like dessert wines, but as for a favourite, no. I don't think I've ever inquired which one it is. It's just given to me and I've enjoyed it.
Yeah. Goes lovely with cheese as well, I think.
Yeah.
I love cheese and wine together.
Mm,
okay, Tom, where should we start?
Should we start with fizz? Mm. I think that's always a good place to start. So I've got two, and they're both champagne method. And what that is secondary fermentation in the bottle.
Okay, and what does that do?
The champagne method essentially does two things. It's going to give you a finer mousse, smaller bubbles, so it's going to feel more elegant. The other thing you get is the flavour of the lees, which is the dead yeast cells. So it's going to taste and feel like a champagne.
But presumably you need other things as well to make it just like a champagne?
Yes, you won't get it just from that. I think there are probably three other key factors, and those are the grapes, the soil type and the climate. If you've got all of those things together, then you've pretty much replicated champagne.
Okay, then. So let's see how much these two have in common with champagne. Now, what's your first?
So my first one is called Tultani Taché. It's 2010. This uses the champagne grapes, so Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and the lesser known Pinot Meunier. It's from Australia, but it's not that Aussie fruit bomb. The fruit is actually from a cool climate area, so it's got a really precise linear acidity to it.
So in layman's terms, you mean it's a bit sharp?
Yes, I mean, in a good way, though. Refreshing is perhaps a good word.
And what are the details for that one?
So this is from Wine Trust 100. This was set up by three local masters of wine, and it costs £18.
Okay, so next up, more fizz.
More fizz, indeed. And I think a good rule for inexpensive fizz is that it should be well-chilled, and there needs to be plenty of it. And that's where these well-made champagne alternatives really come into their own. They can cost about half as much as a basic champagne and be just as good, so you can be more generous with it. So the second is a champagne method, Crémant de Bordeaux, from Tour de Belfort. Now that's quite unusual. It's Bordeaux grape varieties using a champagne method.
A Bordeaux, that must be a lot warmer than champagne.
Indeed. It's a lot further south, it's warmer. And so what they have to do is pick the grapes earlier to retain that freshness.
Does that suggest any compromises in quality, though?
I don't think so in this one. It's actually really well made, and it is as good as many an entry-level champagne. It's got that crisp elegance. It's very refreshing. It's really good.
And Tour de Belfort, they have a local connection?
They do. The vineyard owner, Eugène Lismond, actually lives just up the road in Newmarket. And his story is that he sold the business in Paris and then decided to become a winemaker. So he picked a site in the village where his wife grew up.
Oh, that's so sweet. Can you do that for me?
I'm sure you could always ask him nicely.
Okay. I guess I have to try the wine first, though. Is it available in Cambridge?
It is available in Cambridge. You can get it at the Gonville Hotel, and they have a family connection with Eugène. If you want to buy it directly, you can order it online from the Tour de Belfort website or phone them up. The price of this one is £12.50 a bottle if you buy it directly and get a half case. I imagine it's a bit more at the hotel.
So presumably that's the fizzes. What about Christmas dinner?
Well, for the main course, first up, I've got a white from Bacchanalia. It's a Viognier from Languedoc in southern France.
Can you tell me a bit more about the Viognier?
So Viognier is a white grape, and it's actually originally from the northern Rhone. Its main characteristic is a sort of peachiness, and by that I mean both a sort of flavour and a texture of peaches. Also, it's usually very expensive. This one, however, is a lot more affordable. It's just under £11. And it's also oaked, so it's a bit bigger and fuller, and it's got the richness from coming from a warmer climate like Languedoc, so it will stand up to Turkey.
And the name of it?
This is Domaine de Vedillon, Serica Viognier. And if you want that phonetically, it's Vedilhan, but Vedillon.
And the red?
This is a really nice wine. This is a New Zealand Pinot Noir from Joseph Barnes in Saffron Walden. Now, the owner here is originally from the Loire in France, and so to my mind, this New Zealand wine, it combines the best of that New World freshness and pure fruit with a European elegance and food friendliness.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
I think it's really lovely. Pinot is not a reliable sort of grape at all, so good Pinot, lovely as it is, can actually be quite hard to find.
So can you give us the details on that?
So this one is Henri Clos Marlborough Pinot Noir. It's a 2009 from Joseph Barnes. Now, it's $24.99, but I think it's absolutely worth every penny of that.
Now, I want to hear more about this dessert wines.
Good. Yeah. Well, I've got two of these again, and the first one is a Solera method. So it's the same way that sherry's made.
So Solera is mixing younger and older wines in a big barrel, right?
Exactly. And it's key to how sherry is made. But this one isn't a sherry. It's a Rutherglen Muscat from Australia. It's a really dark orangey mahogany colour, and it's very syrupy. So it's got the fullness, the body to stand up to mince pies or Christmas pudding. It is quite full on. I'd call it Bruce juice. So you may want to chill it down a little bit to enhance the freshness.
So it will taste different at different temperatures then?
Yeah, absolutely. If you chill it slightly, it's going to feel a bit fresher, a bit less aromatic. As it starts to warm up, the acidity becomes less noticeable. It's going to feel bigger and fuller.
And where's that one from?
So this is the Stanton and Killeen Rutherglen Muscat. It's from Noel Young, and it's £13.49 for a half bottle.
Right. And your final wine?
Now, this is another really interesting one. It's a Madeira. It's Henrique and Henrique, and it's from Cambridge Wine Merchants.
Madeira, that's a bit like sherry.
What it has in common with sherry is that the way it's made has a very strong impact on the flavour. So the wine is slowly cooked or madeirized over a number of years at a certain temperature, just below 50 degrees, in barrels. And what this does is transforms it, gives a really distinctive flavour. So what it has in common with the darker sherries, which is maybe what you're thinking of, is that it's got this exposure to air. Don't expect a modern fruit-driven wine at all. What you're going to get is flavours of raisins, mixed fruit, roasted nuts and sweet spices, but combined with a really refreshing acidity.
Sounds like a sort of Christmas pudding in a glass.
Absolutely. It's very much like that. And I think it's probably a perfect wine to have after the Rutherglen Muscat. You know, imagine it's late on Christmas Day, you've stuffed yourself with turkey and sprouts, you've had your Christmas pudding, and you just can't face another mince pie. situation we're probably all familiar with. At that point, this is the perfect wine to get out whilst you stare contentedly into the fire, or, you know, maybe watch the Doctor Who Christmas special, depending on how you roll in your house.
There's a tangent there. I can't go down it as much as I'd like to with 15 minutes left. We don't have enough time for Time Lords. But so you can have it with food?
It will match with food, actually, and it's very nice with cheese and nuts. So again, it's perfect for snacking as you watch the Daleks trying to conquer the universe again.
Oh, that sounds lovely. And the details for that one?
So it's Henrique and Henrique Boal, 10-year-old. It's from Cambridge Wine Merchants, and it's $18.99 for a 50-centilitre bottle.
Okay, that's great. Well, thank you very much, Tom. Yes. And don't forget, listeners, you can follow Tom Lewis on his own blog. That's the Cambridge Wine Blogger. We always provide a link to Tom's page on our Flavour podcast that accompanies each individual episode. So thanks very much, Tom.
You're welcome.
And now it's time for some food and drink news now. At Elementum on the 1st of December, the monthly supper club is being run by Orris & Son. That's £45 per head, and you can book on Cambridge 413-000.
As we mentioned earlier, there is a secret supper club being run by Franglais Kitchen on the 11th of December. It's five courses for £30, and the details are on their website.
A rather intriguing supper club is Delicious Dining, so secret that you're required to wear a mask. It's on the 21st of December, and you can find out more on the Delicious Dining Facebook page. They say they're a supper club focusing on sumptuous, fabulous food with a medieval twist. And despite the extreme busyness of running a successful city centre cafe, Joe Kaczynska and Ivana Gresham are having another plate liquor supper club. It's on the 11th of December.
The next Urban Street Kings pop-up is on the 19th of December, and that's 6 courses for £25. The venue has not yet been announced, so you'll need to keep your eyes and your ears open.
Fiona McDuff, winner of the Cambridge Bake Off, and also the Tank Autometrist Bake Off, is running a French-inspired pop-up patisserie. This will be taking place on the 6th and 7th of December at the Spa, Ely at Forehill.
And before we even had time to tell you that the Man on the Moon has reopened as the Blue Moon, and that it's now being run by Jethro from the Cambridge Blue, we hear that he is also going to be managing the Royal Standard in Mill Road, which is to be reopened.
The Mill Road Winter Fair is coming up on the 7th of December. As usual, food plays an important part. Both Franglais Kitchen and Urban Street Kings will be there. So will Jack's Gelato. But not only with gelato this time, he has hot dogs too. Steak and Honour, whose van appears to be terminally ill, will be selling their highly regarded burgers. The Rice Boat in Newnham will be serving their Corallin food. There's lots of French cheese from Loire Valley Cheese Stall, and Beja Bebidas will be selling luxury hot chocolate and roast chestnuts. The list is long, and it looks unmissable.
Hello, I'm Harry Welburn. Join me on Roots, a world music show with an emphasis on Latino and American rural music. That's every fortnight, Wednesday night, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Cambridge 105, community radio in your city.
Now, we just have a little time for a glance over the food and drink articles in today's papers. Well, actually, you know, it's just The Guardian, as it has a food special in its magazine with some unlikely treats like Yota Motolenghi's saffron trifle and a spicy pear and mascarpone pie. You can tell we're in the run-up to Christmas, can't you? Angela Hartness has canapés like chicory with spicy crab and almonds, or pumpkin fritters and gorgonzola. Heston Blumenthal tells us how to make a mean roast potato. Incidentally, the best example of a mean roast potato I've ever heard involves spreading Marmite all across the potatoes. What do you think of that, Ruth?
You know, this is going to sound controversial. I have no opinion on Marmite because I've not eaten it.
Never? Okay. Well, you'll either love it or you'll hate it, as the saying goes.
I'm sure I'll love it, really.
And finally, people like John Humphreys. He remembers his home cooking from his youth. I think it's going to be a very good issue. And that does bring us to the end of another episode of Flavour. So many thanks to all of our interviewees. Jay Scrimshaw from Urban Street Kings, Nazima Pathan of Franglais Kitchen, Ian Spark and all the apprentice chefs at the Cambridge Regional College, John West from The Art of Meat, Gigi Perry from Pembroke College, Inder Bull from Inder's Kitchen, and of course, Tom Lewis, the Cambridge wine blogger.
Don't forget to follow Flavour on Twitter, at Flavour105. That's where we tweet Cambridge food and drink news. You can also find previous episodes on our podcast page on the Cambridge 105 website.
So do join us again next time. And coming up is Saturday Lunch with Davina and Scratch. Then at 2 p.m. there's Bookmark, the Cambridge 105 book show, hosted by Lee and Alex, featuring Cambridge-based writers. This is a really excellent programme, and each episode includes a studio guest or local author who chats about their life and career in the world of literature. At 3 p.m. it's In Your Company with Sam Davis, and at 3:30 there's The Science Show with Roger Frost and Chris Creese. Then at 4 we go over for 2 hours of Sports Live with Chris Duerden, and then from 6 p.m. until 7 you can tune in to Jason Allen.
So, until the 14th of December, it's goodbye from Flavour.
Goodbye. Bye.